640 Live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. It's a Gary and Shannon show. They're filling in for Bill Handel this week. Mo Kelly and I are filling in for them. Bill Handel recovering from a back injury. L.A. County will be the largest county in the country to launch a universal basic income pilot program. This is coming from Supervisors Holly Mitchell and Sheila Kuehl, and they are proposing $1,000 a month to at least 1,000 residents for a period of 3 years. They have not determined what the criteria will be to be participants in this program, but they're going to vote on the measure on Tuesday, so no putting the cart before the horse on this. No, not at all. Now, we don't need carts and horses to get around anymore, right? We have cars, but without gas, those cars are like a cart without a horse. Joining us now to update us on the Colonial Pipeline situation from ABC News, it's Alex Stone.
Well, hello there. I think a cart and a horse would probably be a better way to go in some areas right now, that at least you'd be able to get around if you've got no gas left. And still so many people, the pipeline is flowing again, that there is gas going through it. It is going into those storage tanks that in the south and on the east coast you see along the freeways. But it's going to take a while. And so the freak out factor has not ended yet, that there was a guy seen today putting gas into a plastic water bottle. Not a good idea. There was a Hummer that exploded in Florida yesterday, full of extra gas canisters that they had, pulling out of the gas station, it exploded. Not a good idea. Filling the back of your car with a whole bunch of gasoline. So people are still doing what they can to get it, this guy among them.
Every gas station is, they're out of gas. They all have the bags on the pump, so... Yeah, it's been a journey to get some gas today.
And in Atlanta, Wayne, there were people today seen taking the yellow plastic bags that say out of service on the gas pumps, taking them off and trying for the last little bit that they might be able to squeeze out of there. And we got them on tape. They're kind of hard to hear, but they said they just had to try.
Yeah, to make it work.
It's really survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest. Oh, and he said they had to try to make it work. Just, we'll take this bag off that says out of service and squeeze out a little bit more. So it is getting better. Gas Buddy, that's been tracking all of this, they're showing that the number of gas stations without gas, they have come down a little bit since midnight, but still 73% of gas stations in Atlanta and in Washington, D.C. are out. So most of the places that folks in those cities are going, there's nothing left, and then people have been hoarding, and they know gas is coming, but they're still worried about it. And President Biden made the plea today.
Do not get more gas than you need in the next few days. Panic buying will only slow the process.
And that's been the whole thing here from the beginning, that the panic buying has been creating this real run on gas. And Colonial says that it is flowing freely again in the pipeline. They need a couple of days. They say by Saturday or Sunday, gas stations are going to be open again. The numbers are beginning to come down, but we're still in that stage where it's going to take a while. And in the meantime, if you're in D.C. or in Atlanta or in the Carolinas, a lot of gas stations have nothing left.
And I know that you're not privy to the thinking either at the federal level or the state governments, but have you heard anybody say anything involving the word rationing?
Well, I mean, they want people to unofficially ration. They have from the beginning, in the sense of, look, if you don't need to go fill up your car, if you've got three cars at your house and they're all empty but you really don't need them, if you've got a bunch of gas canisters, don't go fill them up. That there hasn't been any official rationing that they've been doing, but fire departments, we heard from one fire department in Georgia today, saying that they're not making extra runs to go get dinner, that they're prioritizing what engine do they take. Do they take the what we would call a squad truck in L.A. County, but, the smaller vehicles, or do they need to take the big engine when they go out on a call? So they are rationing in a sense, but an official and a legal rationing, you think of rationing water in California when the rules go into place where then there are police out there looking for it and that you could get fined. No, nothing like that. And I think a lot of that is because it's coming back online, that we're almost there. And some areas are going to be there by tonight. Some it'll be tomorrow. Some it'll be over the weekend. But the pipeline is open. It is flowing again. This problem is going to go away really quickly. We're just not there yet.
Have you heard anything about this claim that Colonial Pipeline did in fact pay like $4 million to the hackers?
Yeah, well, there's some reporting out there, and it had become fairly well known yesterday that there were a number of sources who were saying that Colonial did not pay and had no intention of paying. And now there is some reporting that is unconfirmed, but it's out there saying that before the FBI got involved, because the FBI is very against companies paying these ransoms because it just creates a situation where the bad guys say, wow, they made fill in the blank amount of money and we could do this too. And it just perpetuates the problem that before they notified the FBI that in Bitcoin they may have paid the ransom. And we don't know that yet. And the ransom, it appears, was, and we do know from sources, in the low millions of dollars, likely 4 to 5 million, which is surprising because, as we had talked about earlier in the week, before we knew any of the dollar figure, that cybersecurity experts thought probably hundreds of millions, that this is a big company, this is a vital infrastructure, but this seems to be that they went for a dollar figure that would have been enough. I mean, you know, $4 or $5 million is a lot of money, but not too much that Colonial couldn't pay it. That if you did a, you know, $200 or $300 million, even Colonial, a big company, is not going to be able to write a check for that. You do $4 or $5 million, they could probably pull that off. And there is some reporting out there now that they did that before the feds got involved. And if they did, that is not the way that the FBI wants them to go, but there is that out there now.
And we're not in a, obviously, we don't know if they did or not, but also if they did, we, none of us would be in a position to really judge that decision.
No, not at all.
They have information.
I mean, there have been a lot of schools in that position. There have been a lot of banks, a lot of corporations, and a lot of them have paid because you're told, look, if you give us this money, we will unlock your computers right now. And as a company, you think, okay, before this shuts us down for a week, as we now know it did, or almost a week, can we get it back? And there's some word out there that they did pay, but then it was very slow in coming back. And that's the other thing, that the FBI doesn't want companies to pay, not only because it creates this snowball effect of more of this going on, but you don't know if they're really going to unlock your computers. They lock up your computers and they say, you give us $5 million or more. In many cases, this is a really low number if that's what it ends up being. And we'll unlock them. And then they don't unlock them, or they can't unlock them because they had the technology to lock them, but not to really unlock them. But they told you they did. So you could just lose that money and you've still got the problem. But yeah, as a company, if you're told you will get all of your files back if you give us this money, sure, that you can think that would be the road they would want to go down.
All right, maybe someday we'll learn whether they did or not. Otherwise, it'll be an unsolved mystery. Alex, thank you very, very much.
You got it. Thanks, Wayne.
All right, talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Let's get a news update from Layla Muhammad, and then it's time for some tech talk with Mark Saltzman. Is there something in your purse or your backpack right now that shouldn't be in there? Maybe. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. You took a one orchid. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. Wayne Resnick from the Bill Handel Show filling in. They're filling in for Bill. Mo Kelly and I are splitting this shift. Bill recovering from a back injury. And California could become the first state to let adults add parents to their health care plans. For a while, policyholders could put their children on their plans up to age 26. Now, a lawmaker here in California, Miguel Santiago, he's in Los Angeles right here, has authored AB 570, would allow you to get your parents on those policies under certain conditions. Let's see where that goes and what it does to premiums as well. It is time for Tech Talk. So, of course, here is Mark Saltzman with Tech Talk.
The machines are getting smarter. This is Tech Talk, brought to you by Skynet. Technology. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it,
crash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it. All right. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning. Wow.
Let me sing
it,
your...
Happy Friday. Is it a long day for you?
No. It's Thursday. What are you talking about? But let me sing your praises for a moment, if I may.
Sure.
Because you, of course, have the nationally syndicated show Tech It Out with Mark Saltzman.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You also contribute regularly to USA Today and MSN and a whole bunch of other publications. You've written 16 books?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the last one's Apple Watch for Dummies. We're going to do our fifth edition this year. It's been selling pretty well. Oh. You know, it's kind of hit and miss with tech books. Sometimes I think it's like the greatest idea and it just dive bombs. And then other times I'm like, you know, and then it actually sells really well. You never know. But hey, I appreciate the warm intro. Thanks so much.
You bet. Now, do you want to talk first about Apple's their app tracking technology and how it's going to kill Facebook? Or do you want to talk about how their AirTags are going to kill personal safety? Your choice.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we start with the former? So as your listeners likely know, if they're iPhone users, and chances are they are statistically, about 2 weeks ago, a new operating system update rolled out called iOS 14.5. So it's a free download. It adds new features to your iPhone, fixes up little mistakes. But one of the most buzzed about additions is that when you install an app that does track your behavior, so when an app wants to previously secretly know what other apps you've opened or where you are geographically or what websites you go to, it was like sort of you didn't know. But now Apple has forced developers, and not all are on board yet, but they have to be, to give you the permission as the iPhone user. Like, do you want to allow an app like, say, Facebook to track your whereabouts? So probably not too surprising. Early data is showing only 6% of us, fewer than 6% of iPhone users have opted in to allow you to be tracked. So what that means is apps like Facebook can't personalize the ads to your tastes. So if you're not into sports, you're still going to see ads tied to, say, sporting equipment, even though it's not relevant to you. But it seems like we are prioritizing privacy over personalization. So yeah, and that data, by the way, that those stats that less than 6% of us have opted in, that's provided by an analytics platform owned by Verizon Media that already did a survey and looked at some of their data as well. So that's kind of good news for privacy advocates, not good news for Facebook, because they've been pretty vocal among many other companies, but especially Facebook, about wanting to track so they can better tailor ads, because that's money out of their pocket, right? That's where they make their money, is by selling ads to companies that cater to you specifically. Wayne likes this and Mark likes that. So now you're just going to see random stuff if you've opted out. But good news if you're into privacy, which I hope you are. But
I am, and I've opted out on all of them. And so obviously the first takeaway is people overwhelmingly prefer privacy to ads that might be a little more to their taste. Here's the other thing with Facebook. Let's just focus on Facebook. What's the thing?
They're fun to pick on.
They are. They really are. What is the specific thing in your phone that Facebook and all these other apps who want to track you, what is the specific point of entry that they need access to in order to do it?
So it varies because there's location data in your phone as well. But usually it's giving access, and we blindly accept these T's and C's, these terms and conditions that allow apps to know where you go online, what you're searching for when you go to Google or other search engines, and what other apps you use. So it's basically your behavior on the phone. It's anonymized, so they don't know that it's you and your address and your age and your income and all that. It's just that this phone owner, this dude here, and it could be a girl as well. They shop for groceries. They like sports. They are into reggae music, and they build this, even though it's anonymized, they've built this profile of you, which then in turn can sell ads to companies. And then Facebook makes money in two ways in that respect. One is that they do sell ads that are very tailored to you and your likes and dislikes. And then secondly, if you buy something on Facebook that's advertised to you and they can link it back to Facebook, then they get a cut of the action as well in many cases.
I see. But they need to know.
Right.
They need to know a number or something that is tied to your device and only your device, or otherwise they don't know who they're
Yeah, it's called tokenization. So it's like this long alphanumeric string that isn't tied to you, again, your name, but Facebook knows that that user on that device, and even geographically, where you're based, like they're not going to advertise like a boutique bagel shop in New York to someone who lives in downtown LA. So that makes sense. And that's also, again, to Facebook's, you know, in their defense, it's also relevant to, you know, you want that information to be relevant to you. So yeah, it's a combination of your whereabouts. It's your behavior and your patterns on your device, but it doesn't know that it's, you know, Mary Smith kind of thing.
So in a way, I mean, there is another way of looking at this in which Facebook is really not doing anything nefarious. It's what they're doing is they're really trying to have a win-win where for advertisers, they can say, look, your ads are going to be seen by people who are predisposed to want to see them. And for you, I mean, you're going to get ads, but at least you're going to get ads about stuff that you give a damn about. Yep. And so how did I don't know if there's an answer. There isn't really. It's sociological. But how did that become viewed as so evil?
I know. And that's why I said I get it. Like, you know, if you want to cater to the person to their likes and dislikes, that makes sense to me. Apple is forcing app developers to have greater transparency because we never read the terms and conditions. Even lawyers probably don't understand that legalese. So it's Apple is forcing developers to just be more upfront in plain English. And you get that pop-up screen now. Your listeners have probably seen that, and I know you have, where it says, do you want to allow this app to track you for personalized advertisements? So kudos to Apple for forcing all developers to do this. But I do understand both sides. I know it's evil. It's fun to pick on Facebook being evil and all that, and they don't have the best track record for privacy and security. But it does make sense, right? When you advertise on the radio, like on KFI, or in a newspaper like LA Times, or on, I don't know, LA's NBC station, the advertisers are painting with a broad stroke. They don't really know exactly who they're reaching. Like, you can build a KFI profile of the typical listener, but with social media and digital media, it can get really tailored, you know, really targeted down to that individual. And that's very valuable to companies.
I have the answer, by the way, and I just thought of it listening to you.
Sure.
Facebook needs to start paying people to opt in.
Yeah, that'd be a nice incentive. Then that 6% will go to 94%.
Yes, exactly. And then they will be able to charge more for their ad. In other words, they need to cut us all in the profits, since we are supplying the most important ingredient for their business model. All they got to do is cut us all in for a tiny little taste.
Yep. All right. Well, good luck with that.
I can't tell if you're just being polite or you actually think it's a good idea. Either way, look, either don't say. I don't want to have my, I don't want to be shy. I'll pretend in my mind that you thought it was an okay idea.
Yeah.
Mark, good to talk.
Likewise. I like it in principle. I just don't think it's going to happen. But but good to
Mark,
chat with you as well.
Thank good to you. Talk to you. There he goes. Mark Saltzman, host of Tech It Out, contributor to USA Today and a bunch of other publications, 16 books of his that will help you with your gadgets and so forth. Let's get a news update from Layla Muhammad and then Strange Science. And let me plug this right now. Go on Twitter to the Twitter account at Come On and Farce, which is me. I put a graphic up there for you to look at because it's part of the next segment. This is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. They're filling in for Handel this week. Mo Kelly and I covering this shift. Handel recovering from a back injury. Well, man from Huntington Park pled guilty yesterday to a bunch of Trader Joe's robberies. He went on a four-month crime spree last year. Gregory Johnson, he's 43. He admitted to federal counts. Oh, it's the feds. Interference of commerce by robbery and using a firearm in a crime of violence. He admitted that between August 28th and December 4th, he robbed Trader Joe's stores in, get ready to see if you're on the list, Eagle Rock, Sherman Oaks, Chatsworth, Pasadena, Culver City, Rancho Palos Verdes, Agoura Hills, Brea, Santa Ana, Tustin, Chino Hills. He tried to rob a couple of them, one in Simi Valley, one in Corona. Don't know why he was not successful, although if you try to rob a Trader Joe in Simi Valley, I bet half the customers are LAPD. Okay, get ready, because this particular science is pretty strange.
Strange science.
It's alive!
It's like weird science, but strange.
KFI AM 640. Oh, I already said that. Okay, look. Here we go. I've put up a visual aid on Twitter. It's at Come On and Farce, so that you will see an example of what I'm talking about with this first strange science story. And it's about cats and the thing they do that we all know that they do, which is they sit in things like boxes and baskets and your suitcase. The second you zip that sucker open to pack for a trip, they're in there. They'll go into drawers. They love it. Now, scientists started to look at, what if you just put masking tape on the floor in a square? Are they going to sit in that? And the answer was, yeah, a lot of cats will sit in that too. So now they wanted to take it to the next level. What if there's a box on the floor, or a square, I should say, on the floor, but it's not really there? Now, this is not a hologram. This is an optical illusion that makes it look like you've got a square, a Kanzinza square illusion, and it's very impossible on the radio to describe one. So I put one up at Come On and Farce on Twitter so you can go see what I'm talking about. But it's basically an optical illusion where you see the outline of a box, but it's not really in the image. It's being projected by the way your eyes work and your brain works and the way that the image has been constructed. So at Hunter College in New York, they got a bunch of cat owners to bring in their cats. They put these optical illusions on the floor, and sure enough, a lot of those cats sat in those boxes that weren't even there. So it tells us a couple of things and reinforces that cats love to sit in squares and boxes. But it tells us something else. They see that stuff the same way we see that stuff. You know, every animal's visual system is completely different. And so just because something works as an optical illusion for us doesn't mean it'll work for a cat. I know that they've done some testing where dogs also will see a lot of optical illusions that we can see. But I don't think they react to them the same way. So the cat, now you have to ask yourself, is the cat kind of getting fooled? Are we fooling these cats by putting an optical illusion on the floor? They think they're sitting in a square? Or do they kind of understand maybe there's no real square there, but it speaks to how much they love getting into squares, which may have something to do with giving them the same feeling of safety that they get when they hide, you know, in a box or in a confined space, even though they must understand it's not the same. But maybe it activates their brains in the same way, and that's why they like to do it. Scientists also dealing with mice. If you have cats, you have to have mice. That's the way the world works. And some scientists have controlled the social behavior of mice by shining LED lights into their brains. Imagine a bunch of little mice, and each little mice has a backpack and a little headset. And in the headset, there are four different colored LEDs. You've got your blue, your green, there's a yellow one, and a red one. And this is a long-known principle where by shining different wavelengths of light or colors of light on the brain, specific parts of the brain, they can cause the brain to react. It's called optogenetics. So here with the four different colored lights, they were actually able to control four different parts of a mouse's brain at the same time. And here's what they found. It confirmed something that they have long suspected in mice and in other animals up to and including human beings. And that is this. When you're in a social situation, the level of cooperation that you are interested in giving another person may have a lot to do with whether you're on the same wavelength. And I mean literally. If your brain is firing in a way that is similar to the way their brain is firing, and how would your brain know what their brain is doing? But apparently, it's like vibing. You know, you talk about vibing. Oh, I met this person. We really were vibing hard. Apparently, that's a real thing. Because with these mice, they were able to make their brains fire any way they wanted. So they were able to say, let's put three mice in a room and let's make all their brains fire the same way. Or let's put them in there and let their brains do whatever they want. And they found when their brains were firing the same way, they did more grooming of each other and other cooperative behaviors. So this is the solution to being nervous going to a party. We need headsets that we can put on, and then we go to the party and we all hit like the same setting, and suddenly that party is dynamite because we're all on the same wavelength. Let's get a news update from Layla Muhammad and then more strange science. It's not just mice. It's not just cats. They put an implant in a guy and wait till you hear what he was able to do. AM640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. They're filling in for Bill Handel this week. Mo Kelly and I covering this shift. Bill Handel recovering from a back injury. Well, the judge who oversaw the Derek Chauvin case in Minneapolis has now postponed the trial for the other three former police officers charged in his death. That trial has been pushed to March of next year. Part of the reasoning is to allow all the heat around the Derek Chauvin case to cool off a little bit. They were going to have that trial this summer. You don't want to do that. So he's moved jury selection to March 8, hoping to start that trial shortly thereafter. It'll be a while before we see what happens to those guys. Back to some strange science here on the Gary and Shannon Show. 65-year-old man, paralyzed from the neck down, was able to write on a computer screen by thinking about it. That is the case study that is quite amazing. And this is out of Stanford University. It was published in the journal Nature. They put two grids of little electrodes right on the surface of this gentleman's brain. These electrodes can read the electrical activity, and they put them on the part of the brain that controls the hand and finger movements. So he's paralyzed from the neck down, and he's been paralyzed from the neck down for some time. But with those electrodes in place, he would just sit there and imagine writing words. They were able to come up with an algorithm that could decode the way his brain was firing for each letter. In other words, oh, this is how his brain fires when he's thinking of an N, and here's how it fires when he's thinking of a Q. And boom! And he can think type. I'm calling it think type because it goes directly from what he's thinking about to being decoded and put on the screen. 15 words a minute. Now, If you're one of these Mavis Beacon maniacs, 15 words a minute means nothing to you. It's laughable. If I said, hey, I can type 15 words a minute, you would not be impressed. But most people age 65 using like a smartphone, that's about the rate that they type on a smartphone. So it's pretty good. And especially since it had been years and years since he got that spinal cord injury. He has not been using his hands and fingers for such a long time, but the electrical activity in the brain is just like he didn't even have the problem. Oh, pasta, you waster of packaging materials. You know, I'm not one of these pasta people who gets really intense about all the different shapes. And if you have a certain kind of sauce, there's the best possible shape to use for that kind of sauce. And if you don't use that kind of shape for that sauce, you're a jerk and you should not be allowed to cook at dinner parties. But there, we could all agree there's many shapes of pasta, and a lot of them, if you put it in a box, there's a lot of air in there, right? Now, if you have, you know, spaghetti, you can put tightly in a box or packaging. Basically, flat pastas require less packaging. So some scientists who work in materials design have come up with a way of making flat pasta that then turns into the shape that you want it to be when you cook it. And it has something to do with you have flat pasta and you stamp different kinds of grooves into one side of the pasta. So what happens is you throw it in the hot water and it starts to absorb it and, you know, pasta expands. But because you stamped it with these grooves, one side doesn't expand the same way as the other. And so it's almost like, I want to say it's like pasta origami, maybe. And so you put in a flat thing and it, you cook it and it's a rotelli, for example. And the idea, of course, is you can save a lot of packaging because any shape of pasta you could actually make flat and ship flat. Let's do one last thing from the world of sports. You know, in football, but by football, I mean soccer football. You know that sometimes even the best player will blow a penalty kick. I don't know if you remember. Was it 2004, my soccer historians, where Beckham had a penalty shot against Portugal and he blew it and everybody went, oh, my God, Beckham blew a penalty shot? It happens. So here's what some scientists did. They put these special helmets on soccer players. They're non-invasive. They use some technique called functional near-infrared spectroscopy, and it can measure your brain activity when you're moving around. And then they had them take penalty kicks, and they found out something very interesting. The players that always made the penalty kicks, when they were making the penalty kick, the task-oriented part of their brain was activated. In other words, 2002, I'm being told. All righty. So they activate the task part of their brain, meaning they go, oh, I need to kick this ball 11 meters over there into that net. No problem. Boom. It's like I'm picking up this yellow highlighter. I can probably pick up this yellow highlighter a billion times and never not pick it up properly. But the people who whiffed it, instead of activating the task part of their brain, they activated their prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that's involved in long-term thinking. So it boils down to this. If you step up for a penalty kick and you're just focused on getting the ball in the net, you're probably going to make it. But if you get up there and you feel the pressure and you start to think about what's going to happen if I don't make it, they're going to boo, the coach is going to hate me, you're much more likely to whiff it. And that's Strange Science, and that is the Gary and Shannon Show on a Thursday. John and Ken are coming up next, but first, a news update from Deborah Mark. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app.